Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of Experience Experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it. Hello, welcome to Life Lab. Hey, have you ever been on a hike or something and you just witness something in nature and it just blows your mind? The one thing that I can think of for me that best exemplifies this is when I was walking in California in the Muir Woods and I looked up at the redwoods and it was hard for me to believe the size of the trees. This forest that I was in looked fake.
Mm, yeah.
And I was just blown away.
Yeah. That's a perfect descriptor of awe. Blown away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we were lucky enough to go on that family RV, the Schaefer Adventure last summer. So the amount of times we bumped into awe that was emanating from nature, I'd have to sit down and make a list. I mean, it was just tons of stuff we saw, you know, multiple canyons, multiple redwood forests, sunrises, sunsets, multiple ocean escapes, just there was a lot. But it was that feeling of being blown away, of having no words.
And I'll say this, when I say blown away, I think it's like a paradigm shift in my mind occurred. You know, we live in the Midwest. We've got plenty of woods. And as kids, we grew up, you know, spending time in nature. And we got some big trees here. You know, we've got maple trees. We've got oak trees. There's some huge old oak trees that we have that are, they're massive. Like, there's no other word for it. They are massive. But then when I was standing there, it was like I had to reframe what I thought a massive tree was.
You don't mess with the redwoods and sequoias, man.
And just standing there next to them. And there were trees there up in the Olympia National Forest in Washington, too. There were trees that you could cut a hole in the trunk and drive a car through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as tall as the arch, 623 feet.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So anyway, what I'm saying is it made me reframe. It made me think about it in a different way. And I kind of think awe does that.
Yes. I love it. The first few things I wrote down was...
And we're talking about awe.
We're talking about awe. Just to clarify, awe, A-W-E. A couple things I jotted down. The first word I put down was discovery. Because when I'm in awe, you use the word reframe. It could be remind. Bump back into whatever. It's just like, holy cow, I'm rediscovering the size, the intensity, the magnitude, the beauty of what's around me. And that can be nature, and we'll talk a lot about that, but it can also be social, and it can also be technology driven, I think. But nature's the biggest one for me personally. But we tend to take that stuff for granted, especially the things around us. My favorite phrase for what awe is for me is right-sized. It right-sizes me to say, Zach, you are totally unimportant and a tiny nothingness part of this universe. And that's a positive for me. It recalibrates that the universe isn't Zach-centric. It's nature-centric. It's outside of Zach's brain-centric. And I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, there was something I read when I was looking at trying to put together notes for today's show that I think hit that on the head. It said, whenever you experience awe, you can have a self-transcendent experience where you shift your attention away from yourself.
There you go.
And you feel like you're part of something greater.
Yep. Which goes back to one of the themes of this show is our need to belong to something bigger.
Yeah.
And I think that brings that euphoric gratitude. you have a euphoria and you're grateful to be connected to all of this wonder, but you also at the same time know that, wow, I really am a small part of this universe. And so there's this healthy fear there as well. There's a fear that's part of awe, whether we recognize it or not.
There is definitely what you said there about a euphoria, a euphoric feeling to it. And one thing that, again, struck me as I was doing a bit of research for this was it talked about how awe can be considered like an altered state of consciousness akin to flow state. So I don't know if you've ever experienced, but when I've been in flow state fully, I also get a euphoric feeling.
Oh, yeah.
Where I'm just in whatever I'm doing fully. It's like, it's almost like in when Neo sees the Matrix. Right?
Well, it's exactly like that. And there's like, no thinking, no analysis. There's only instinct and doing.
Yeah, you're just doing and it's easy and there's euphoria to it as well. It's like you have become one with whatever it is you're trying to do, to accomplish. And I think awe is that as well. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. It's all of that. It's a focused feeling, that feeling of connectedness, but you're focusing. You're not when you're truly taking in and appreciating or noticing awe, when you're noticing awe or you're in awe, you're not distracted. We're not paying attention to our Apple Watch or our phone. We're in that moment connected to that big thing. And I don't think a lot of humans get that connection as often, at least we're in typical city living.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Living in the mountains and stuff, you definitely have it, but then it can become normalized
as
well.
It does. I think so. I think that there's a component of new experience to awe.
Yes, absolutely.
And so if you live, you know, if you lived in the redwood forest that I just described, you would not have had the experience of awe that I had.
That's your benchmark.
On the flip side, you could come to the plains of the U.S. and you've only lived in a huge forest and you could just see the vastness of the plains and that would put you in awe. Where we grew up in, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I do think there's something about novelty of experience in inducing awe. However, it's not just like every new experience is going to induce. There's like a special characteristic to it where the perception of the experience has to be very different in some way.
Different. And I think scale has something to do with it.
Yeah. It has to like break your preconceived notions.
Expectations. So the scale could be enormous, like nature type stuff. Or if we're talking about awe-inspiring technology, it could be the opposite. Nanotechnology and be like, oh my goodness, this AI robotic crazy thing is as big as this gnat. Like, how is that even possible? But so to me, scaling and intensity is part of that.
Yeah, there was a – it's basically in the thing I was reading, it said perceived vastness can cause awe. And that's, you know, obviously can come from observing something like literally physically large, like the Grand Cabin, or just from a more theoretical perceptual sense of like being in the presence of someone with prestige or a complex idea, like the theory of relativity, stuff like that. And I think what you're getting on with the whole technology thing is the idea part. And it blows my mind some ideas. It's one of the reasons why I like to look at like futuristic things or futurism things, because some of the ideas of stuff that we don't have today and can't achieve today but could potentially in the future, I don't know what it is about it, but they do. They elicit that sense of awe.
They give you a good euphoric feeling. Technology's interesting as it ties to awe, and technology for me is just tools, you know, very advanced tools at this point, because it can both enable awe and constrain awe, I believe. It can enable awe because some of the things we're talking about, the technologies of today are truly awe-inspiring, but we just have taken most of them for granted. But the technologies of tomorrow and the future, those are still awe-inspiring because they haven't occurred yet, but we can see what's possible. But they can also constrain. I saw that easily around the Grand Canyon. 90% of people are more focused on their phones than literally just walking around and taking it in. Like the technology, we become its slave. That's insane. Or think about how much planning and prep people do before they go to a place like the Grand Canyon. We specifically didn't look at pictures of it, tried not to look at videos of it. We planned how to get there, but we wanted to just bump into it as it exists rather than put all these preconceived notions, expectations that it had to live up to. And I think that helped us really appreciate it.
A couple things. Number one, I think it's crazy that people are looking at their phones there at the Grand Canyon.
The majority of the time on their phone, like just filming it all. And you want to film that for future self. I get that, remembering self. But because we're all two selves, experiencing self, remembering self. People were putting 75% focus on remembering self while they were there.
Yeah.
And to me, that was novel. That was almost awe-inspiring. Just be like, humans, look at where we're at, man. This crazy 13-mile-wide gaping hole, and you don't even want to, like, experience it. You want to capture it on
your phone. We want to bottle that awe.
Yeah.
So that we can look at it. But here's the funny thing is, like, people never look at those pictures. You know what I mean? You bottle it. You spend you miss the awe of the experience and bottle it, and you never – okay, so that's one thing I wanted to say, and I think is very interesting. We can go down a rabbit hole there. The other thing I want to say – is I think what you said was technology can constrain it. And then that led my mind down the path of what about effort and its relationship to awe? So the Grand Canyon would be a perfect example. Another perfect example that I always thought about was I can remember being in Colorado, right? So we had moved to Colorado recently. It must have been one of my first trips up to the mountains, but we were standing on a peak, you know, it might have been like the Continental Divide or something like that. And if you look out, as far as you can see, it's just more mountains. Layers upon layers of mountains stretching out to the horizon and getting more and more washed out by the atmosphere and whatever else as they go. And I thought about it from the perspective of, can you imagine if you're traveling and you left Missouri and you're trying to get to California?
You hit that.
And you just, you know, we're at 14,000 feet. You know, we had been over many mountains and foothills just to get to this point. And looking at that peak, it would have become completely clear to you what you're dealing with at that point, right? And I'm just thinking, you've got a cart that you've been pulling with oxen. Your family is trying to ration food and deal with the elements. And you get up to this point to see what else you have to deal with. It's just layer.
You get cholera, you're eating each other, you're starving.
More mountains and peaks. And I was just like, oh, that's why Denver exists. Mm-hmm. People got up to that point.
They're like, nah.
They're like,
we're done.
Fuck this.
Yeah, we're done. That's exactly why Denver exists. Yeah,
we're turning around. We're done. So that to me, like I got this sense of awe and I had to think of it in a different way. Here's another interesting part. When I framed it in my mind that way, I got just this overwhelming sense of awe, like, oh my God, that experience must have been exhilarating and horrifying all at the same time.
Right. And that is awe.
And I was like, you know, I don't know who we were in the car with. Right. But in my head, I've got some people. And I remember being like, oh my God, can you imagine being one of the Frontiers people and seeing this? And we had just gotten done with this nice, comfy car ride where we had snacks in the car and whatever. And they're like, yeah, would have been crazy. They get like back in the car. So yeah, I see where technology constrains that. Mm-hmm. It took little to no effort for us to get there and stand. And then obviously, like when you're up there, like hiking around and stuff, it's hard to breathe. There's not as much oxygen around.
You got to earn it.
Yeah. And it's just like, oh man, this is hard. Let's get back in the car. where people didn't have that luxury. And so,
yes. Absolutely. That's a great example. Yeah. It constrains our connection to the past because of how effortless things are for us today because of technology. It makes it more difficult to appreciate the hard struggles that people had to go through to get us to where we are today.
Yeah, we talked about – so you were just talking about how technology constrains it and then
– but it also enables it.
And how it enables it. But we also talked about how like a new experiences mm-hmm. are you know, can facilitate awe. Yeah. And I think that might be a problem that we have now, is that technology enables us to have new experiences, you know?
Well, a whole new, metaverse, building out a whole new arena existence for experiences to even occur.
Yeah.
You know, and the way that I thought about technology enabling awe was just the internet, the idea of hive mind, the idea of learning. Oh, there is a ton more to discover. We can continue building out new technical universes together, if you will. And while I don't want to be on, I don't want to be in that personally all day, I like using that as a tool to help me discover new things and learn. But where I personally think people go wrong is just over researching. Like, for instance, we're going to Mexico soon, which we're very lucky to do with Dave and Lauren and another friend, Bart and Shannon, and me and Kizzy. And it's going to be awesome. We're going to have so many opportunities to bump into awe, and that's going to be one of my change challenges. But what I'm personally not doing, while I looked up the place we're staying, I don't want to research like all the nature part. Like, I just want to be there and soak it in, you know, because if not, it reduces the impact and the emotional feeling that I'll have in the moment. For me, I don't know if that does it for everybody. For me, it does.
Right. I get it.
Yeah. But technology also enabled us to check out the resort and look at the rooms and figure out which one we wanted and all that kind of stuff. And that's cool.
You know what I think? I think technology allows us to both experience new experiences and awe through the technology, but also it makes us, I don't know if I want to use this word or not, but it sort of cheapens the experience to where the awe becomes fleeting, right? So, for example, you know,
I think awe is always fleeting. You can't live in a perpetual state of awe.
That's a good point.
But I think what you're saying, and you finish your thought, is it shortens that that appreciation of it even less.
I think that's what I'm saying. I remember being in awe of the internet and the idea of the internet. And here's the other thing. I think there is an experience of a group and what other people think about it that impact our feelings about awe as well. So when I was, 12 years old, 14 years old, and we got our first Gateway 2000 computer, you know, really courtesy of your mom. Cause I remember my parents being like, we want to get a computer.
The Kyle Mubox, art called mom.
Exactly. And your mom had gotten one recently. And so we started talking, but that was back when it was like Prodigy and America Online or whatever, right? And so I remember getting online and talking with somebody like in a different part of the world, just chatting. And it like blew my mind, the possibilities, right? And this was like at the very start of the internet. I remember going to Borders bookstore and picking up a magazine. There was no Google. There was nothing. There was no search engine. This magazine was a list of websites that you had to literally type the URL into the browser to go to these websites. And it was like, you know, the world's 200 websites or something at that time, right? And it just blows your mind to think that they were able to have a directory of websites at one time. That's how few there were. And where I'm going with this is I remember talking or trying, I'm this 12, 14 year old kid, whatever I was, trying to talk with extended family at like family events and friends about, have you been on this internet thing? It's unbelievable. And them just being thoroughly unimpressed.
Yeah. You can't share awe.
Right. And me like being, don't you understand the possibilities of what this could be? You know, you could put anything on a webpage and anywhere in the world, somebody can go there and see what you have to say, what you have to share. And they're just like, why would anyone do that?
Yeah. I don't know if awe and empathy could be friends. Like, I think it's hard to try to get somebody to really adopt the feeling of awe. Like, I think you have to bump into it on your own. There's a lot there. Nature. So that's easy. Boom. But relationships and what you're talking about, you had a sense of awe. What I also appreciate is I like seeing someone be in the moment of a sense of awe.
Yes.
That to me is awe. I like it because just you're wrapped up in that. You can just feel and see and smell the discovery, and they feel like a kid, and it's playfulness, and it's fuck the rules. I don't care what society thinks. This technology is awesome. Or look at this sunset, and they're just swept away in it, and they don't care what other people are thinking or doing. I like seeing that to somebody else.
Well, I think it's shared experience because it helps us re-experience that awe too, right? Like, so, and I think that's what I was trying to do when I was a kid, trying to get other people excited about the internet. It was, I was seeking that shared experience, that connection with others.
Right.
Because that's part of the thing that I talked about, right? Is that awe makes you feel, it shifts your attention away from yourself. Mm-hmm. And you feel like you're part of something bigger.
Yeah, excellent point. Yeah. It makes me think of a popular example, Elon Musk. The first time SpaceX landed their rockets that they can reuse. Our kids are going to grow up with space travel being normal, that all rockets are reused. And they'll be like, well, what do you mean they didn't reuse rockets? Like, that's stupid. These are really expensive to make. That's going to be their norm. But we're living through the time where that's changing. But there was a big meme going around. The first time that happened, somebody at SpaceX captured Elon's face looking at that thing landing. And the picture's unreal because he is just so swept up in it. And all the meme was basically like, I wish my man would look at me the way that Elon looks at his rockets landing, you know, kind of the joke. But it's true. It was just it was so powerful. And I liked seeing that picture. Like, that gave me a sense of awe, just like the fact that humans can get caught into that emotional tornado in a positive way. But that's why awe has to be fleeting. Because if it wasn't, we wouldn't get shit done. Yeah. We wouldn't have our little beehive that we're doing productivity. It wouldn't work.
We would just be stuck in awe of something. You know?
Maybe that's what ecstasy is for people, or heroin. It puts them in that state of awe.
You know what's funny is we've talked in the past about how the idea that I like is that the human, you know, super organism, like we're all connected in some way that we don't know. And we're all driven and motivated to keep achieving more, creating new technology. And we don't understand why, right? Like, I forget whose quote it was, but it was that humans are the sex organs of technology, right? But I think what we're talking about goes to this, which is like, think about the effort and the time and the work.
And the risk?
Just the idea that we could have a rocket that goes to space and then can come back and land itself.
Where we tell it to, or where they tell it to.
You know, and then that idea is an awe-inspiring idea. And so then to put in the tens of thousands of man hours of time and work and effort and engineering and building and testing and then to see it come to fruition. Yeah, I understand why he was looking at that with awe. That is fucking amazing. Yeah.
I think there's two other things that just popped into my head, and I'm going to just totally toss them out. We can talk about if they're good ideas or just stupid. There's a sense of courage and ego deflation that comes along with awe. It takes courage to step out of yourself to acknowledge, I am not the center of the universe. This thing going on is way bigger than me. That's ego deflation, if at all, for a little bit. And I think maybe, here's the theory, that's why people, when they're bumping into awe, they want to stay in their technology, in their world that they've built online, that they control, where they're the center of the universe. I'm at the Grand Canyon. Boom, post it out. Look at me. I'm here. I'm at the Grand Canyon background. I'm foreground. Ego deflation. They don't want to recognize I'm a smaller part. Again, not consciously, most likely. But I think it takes courage to step outside of I, the capital I of the ego, and just say, no, 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 small lowercase I. This is the grand piece. Ego deflation. I think there's something there on that.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like competing drivers. Like we have this drive for control. And I think that's the ego thing that makes us feel like we need to be the center. We need to have control. But then there's also the drive for feeling like you're a part of something bigger, that mystic experience that we're talking about today of awe.
But again, for me, the control piece is, well, I am. I'm doing it online for all my people I'm connected to because I'm in control of that.
Yeah.
I've built that online Facebook community. Look at all the likes I'm getting. That's a network. Those are my people. I've driven that. I've built that. They can't just suck it in because it flips it. They are not in the foreground anymore. Now they're in the background when they have to experience that sense of awe. That's how I think about it. Again, this is just total theory here.
Yeah, no, I sort of think it's a what you're talking about is a hurdle that needs to be overcome to truly experience awe.
Yes.
So Elon, deflate your ego. Elon in that moment, if he was just being 100% pure egotistical, could have been looking at that rocket and had no awe and just been like, yeah, that's what I did.
Right. Look at what I did. Yeah. I built this. But no, it was like this came now. It could have been his idea. Whatever. He built the company. But every time they talk about it, he's like, I didn't build this. Yeah. Our team built this. This isn't me building this.
Well, and it was the culmination of hundreds of years of technology.
Exactly. That came the Russians before us. Like, it was all coming up to this moment. And so I don't know. That to me is important. It ties back to that idea of right-sizing myself. But I think there's courage. That's the stoicism part. It takes courage to set down our phone, to disconnect from the reality that we've built where we're the center of it, and to remind ourselves, no, we're not.
It does take courage. That's weird. I never thought of it that way, but it does.
Think about it. Being that weirdo on the beach that's just soaking it in and looking at the ocean and looking at the sun and not giving a fuck what other people think and being in awe. People don't want it. Oh, I got a picture of it. I'm at the beach. There's no courage.
Being willing to reframe yourself as an unimportant part of the universe.
Yes.
Looking up at the stars.
Oh, we haven't even mentioned stars.
And just being blown away by the universe that we're surrounded by and thinking about. You know, I've had moments where, you know, all the stress melts away, all the worries, all the struggle, everything. I realize how insignificant my entire life is just looking up at the stars.
And that can be a good thing. We're talking about that in a positive way.
I know, but it does take courage.
Yes,
it takes courage to be able to think of yourself and your life in that way. And I think some people are fragile and insecure that they don't want to experience it.
To
even
think of yourself in that way, again, right-sizing your, quote, self, or just to not think of yourself and just be in the moment with whatever you're experiencing.
Right.
That's hard for people. Right. Here's three other scenarios we haven't talked about. We've talked about nature. We've talked about our relationship to other humans and how we experience awe. We've talked about technology. Birth, death, and accidents. I want to talk about birth, death, and accidents.
Well, when you just were talking about courage, I wanted to say, because reframing yourself into understanding what a tiny, insignificant part of the universe that you are brings up the thought of death. And the fear of death.
Yes. The fear is always there. And fear is part of awe. Fear is part of what Elon had going on there. That's why it was a powerful emotion. It's tragedy. It's comedy. It's happiness. And it's potential tragedy all at the same time.
So let's spend some time on this, because I think it's an awesome part.
Go.
And let me do this. To start it off, let me juxtapose it against
what Bart would love that term.
Against what these folks have written as, why do we experience awe? You know, I love scientists sometimes, and then sometimes I'm like,
they're full of shit. They have to just write something.
They're trying to explain stuff, right? They're trying to, this is why, evolutionary psychology, blah, blah, blah. So said, some studies suggest that awe evolved because it prompted reverence and devotion to powerful leaders and promoted social cohesion. I'm going to call bullshit on that. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. Fine. Okay. Whatever. Okay, theory. To me, there's a lot more to awe than that. Next one. Awe may have evolved because it helped people identify safe places to seek shelter, such as environments with large vistas that would have allowed our hunter-gatherer relatives to see approaching predators or attackers. Are you serious? That's such a fucking reach.
Stupid. Whoever wrote that, they should be.
That is such a reach. The best one they wrote, or it could help us be more adaptive. Changing our thought structures. Okay, so that one is most close to something that I think would be mildly acceptable. Anyway, so I want to juxtapose.
Those are some competing theories.
Yeah, these explanations versus what we're talking about now, which I think has way more to do with it, right? Fear of death.
Yep.
And realization, to me, with the fear of death, with the idea of death, to me comes my, whatever you want to call my spirituality is, or my religion, which is a belief that we are all connected in some way and we are all part of something bigger than ourselves, like than our individual selves. And that, to me, I think upon death, that that happens, whatever it is that happens. I don't know if it's like we realize that or we experience that or there's an actual occurrence where we return to our interconnected beings. I don't know, you know, but anyone who doesn't think about that and then is confronted with that idea, like everything that you think, everything that you do, everything that is important to you is going to disappear. And it means nothing in the grand scheme
right,
of things.
Right.
That's a tough pill to swallow if you haven't done it. If you haven't taken the time.
Taken stock.
Done the work to really get comfortable with that thought.
Fear of death drives almost all other fears to some degree. And people don't want to grapple with it, man. It's a powerful thing. Yes, death is a huge one. Going to funerals. You know, you should be in awe of life. That should be the point of a funeral, to celebrate the life of the person, how they've contributed to your life. That, like, there should be awe there. And of course, there's sadness, for sure, that you will no longer share time with that person. But death is part of life until the longevity folks solve that technical problem, as they say. But for now, it's still part of life. And there's awe around it, or there should be, you should take, maybe not in the moment of the funeral, but you should leave from there and reflect, take stock of your life, of the time you have with that person. And that hopefully should give you some sense of awe to remind you, like, this life stuff, man, it happens quick and it goes away.
It's
no matter what you think happens afterwards.
Ferris Bueller.
It ain't like this. That's right.
Ferris Bueller. What does he say?
That's right.
Life moves fast. If you don't stop to look around every once in a while, you can miss it. You know, I think that this is my opinion, right? So this has nothing to do with anything I've read or looked up or whatever. But my opinion is that in that moment, when you're thinking about that fear of death, you should reframe it into an awe of the experience of life.
Right.
What an amazing thing this is. We don't know anything about consciousness or where it comes from, why we're here, and people all make up bullshit to try to explain it to make
themselves
feel better.
That's how science progresses. We have to come up with theories.
But we got to make ourselves feel better because everyone knows it and everyone pretends like it's not true. Like, we're all going to die. Just exactly the things that I said. You will die. Everything that you've ever done will become meaningless. No one will remember who you are. You know what I mean? Even like the most amazing people who have had the most amazing discoveries and inventions and whatever, like, I don't know them. Like, okay. Right. Like, I know a name did that, right? Like, okay. So who was it? Was it Da Vinci who created calculus to talk about, to explain how the stars moved? Doesn't matter.
No, yeah. No, it was Newton, I believe.
Newton. It was Newton. And, like, just think about that. That is mind-blowing.
Technically, it was a man from the Middle East long before.
Of course, yeah. Of course. And then we reframed right. it, of course, because power.
Right.
But anyway, my whole point, but that's a perfect example, right?
Yeah.
Like, you could do something that changes the trajectory.
Changes everything. Like, we're not looking at these computer screens without that.
Exactly. You can change it.
And we're like, who invented it? Like, oh, who? This guy? No, no, not really.
No, not him. I don't know. Some other
and
guy.
And where did probably. He get his ideas from? Yeah. Who knows? Probably some ancient Chinese scholar.
Right. And then so my whole point is, like, you think you're going to do something amazing. You want to have this legacy, that word legacy, right? Like, give me a break. At some point in time, everyone who ever had an experience with you, everyone who actually knew you is going to be gone. And with it, all of that is going to be gone too. And I'm not trying to be like, I'm trying to say, like, there needs to be awe of life in the experience that we have that allows you to step away from the ego that is you and truly experience the awe of
I had a life. Sense of awe at the funeral I was at Ray, who died. He was our age, 38, 39. And going up to the casket and seeing him and just, thinking about what an unbelievable human being he was. True ray of sunshine, always happy, always willing to contribute and help, and just genuine, humble, humorous, fun.
Smiling,
totally skilled in the kitchen. Why? Because he wanted to bring people together. He wanted people to share and connect and have fun. Just a great human. And then you do what you do as a human. I imagine myself in that casket because he's my age. He wasn't supposed to die.
No.
It was unexpected. And there's that healthy fear, like, mine, that could be me so easily. And it brought me that sense of awe and making sure I was taking stock and respecting life. And there's I don't know. I hope other people do that at funerals. I don't know. I'm sure they do.
That's a good question.
I'm sure some people don't.
Well, I think it just...
It's the intentionality behind
I think
it.
The question comes, how do you handle that fear?
Yeah.
A lot of people handle that fear by shutting it down, by pushing it out, by pretending there's some other truth, to make themselves feel better in the moment rather than just accepting it. Yeah.
So death, birth, the idea of being born, seeing my kids born, there is no way to describe that. You know, it's like, as Buffett says, it's like, okay, cool. Yeah. You're good at explaining things and persuading people. Explain how sex feels to a virgin. Right? It's the same thing. Like, you can't talk to somebody who doesn't have kids about that moment of the kid coming in, or even really about being a parent, because it's just, they can't empathize. There's no way to begin to empathize there. And when those little things come into the hospital room or wherever you're having them,
explain that.
Yeah, I can't. There's no way to. I don't even want to try to. It's just it happens.
New life. And
it's wild. So that's huge. Anything else on birth? That to me, again, that happens less often.
Yeah, I mean, it's the entire thought about birth and life is awe-inspiring to me. The whole idea that all life is using energy that's beaming to
from
us.
From one star.
From a burning
the sun.
Star.
And, that to me, I wrote the sun up top. And it's just like, we just take that for everything ties back to the sun.
I know.
Like, everything.
We want to talk about, like, sun.
No wonder people worshipped it for thousands of years.
Yeah. And while we're on this topic of kids, having kids allows you to experience awe vicariously.
Great point.
Over and over again.
Excellent point.
I don't remember it, but I'm sure there was a time where, like, that idea struck me. Like, the all energy on Earth, the warmth, all the life, everything that makes the Earth anything, it all comes from one burning star out there. And all of this energy on the Earth, right? Think about how much energy is on the Earth cumulatively. Like, it's like, oh my God, it's mind blowing. That's what? It's less than 1% of the sun's energy that's hitting the Earth at any
one
time?
I think it's way less than that.
Maybe I don't know.
I don't know what it is, but it's very little.
You get my point.
Yes.
Right? So it's like, those types of things are truly, if you actually can sit and think about it, it's freaking.
It's hard because of the scale.
Yeah, you can't. Some things, like the size of the universe. It's like, I want to experience.
Like, turn around and look at my poster, putting time in perspective. I have a poster hanging in here. If you take time, it starts with 24 hours in the top left, and it slowly goes down up to the total life of our universe. Visually, it shows that based on bar graphs. It's wild.
I like the end when it says age of the universe, the word confusing is there.
Yep.
Because you can't, there's nothing that you can actually compare that we know that will give us any sense of frame, any sense of scale.
Like, you have to be on a psychedelic to think about that and really be connected to it, because the old normal human brain ain't going to do it.
Right. Well, I've seen these cool websites that try to say, here is you. And then they try to zoom out and say, here's the Earth. And then here is the sun. And then here is the biggest star in the universe. And then
like what Men in Black does in the locker. I love that.
Yes, that. Whenever there are cool visual things and I think this goes to the whole reframing, right? Like, a part of awe is reframing your thought process or the way that you think about something. In order to do that, you have to have something to compare it to.
Mm-hmm. A benchmark.
There has to be a benchmark. There has to be a comparison benchmark.
Yep.
That's interesting. Yeah. So that's a part of awe, I would think. Is it?
Yeah. I like foreground, background. Yes. So to feel awe, there has to be a background that you've become used to, normalized to, desensitized to, and then boom, that pops for a little bit and you're in awe.
Well, you were just talking about psychedelics. One of the things that, everyone who I've ever heard of who's done it, it describes as maybe the most awe-inspiring experience was a DMT trip, right? Mm-hmm. Where they go into a different universe and they can't even explain it.
Well, they do explain it, and they explain it with themes that cut across it, even when these people aren't doing it together and have never read about what the experience is like. They see or experience similar things.
Yeah, they like very experience other entities that are like bouncing balls.
The whole process they go through and seeing certain colors and plaid and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. So that is, that's another thing that I think is interesting because, and the reason I think I got there was because they have a hard time explaining it. They give us, they try to compare it to things, you know, like bouncing balls of entities of other consciousness. I think I've heard a couple times. And they go, after they say that, they go, but it's nothing like that. But it's the closest that I can say, right? But like to really experience it, it's nothing like that. And to me, that's like, that's really cool because I experience awe when I talked about a redwood, which is a tree that's just the scale of it is in, like, I never thought it could be like that. It just makes me think about myself in the planet in a different way, right?
Mm.
And then, so then to say to take that, I see trees every day. I'm looking out your window at some massive, massive trees. Look at that one way over.
Yeah, there's some big ones. I had a huge one in my backyard until it fell across this road and almost killed a bunch of people.
And so I have something that I can easily compare that to. And you know, as we describe the redwood to other people, they can easily say, oh, wow, yeah, that's amazing. Even if they're not in the presence of it and they're not experiencing that awe, they can at least try to understand through our language. Versus there are some experiences like what we're talking about where there is no language for it.
Yes.
That I think is awesome. And when you talk about death, I don't know. I'm positive. I'm optimistic when I think about it. I do think there'll probably be more experience and I think it will be the type that language doesn't cover. And sure. To me, that's, I'm not afraid of that.
During your discussion there, which was, I agree with, excellent, well said, you used this word at least twice. Here's how normalize the idea of awe has become awesome.
Yeah.
We use awesome all the time. All the time. It's totally taken. Most things aren't awesome at all.
Almost nothing.
Almost nothing.
Yeah.
What about accidents? Okay. This is so where my mind was going thinking about accident, like seeing, and I'm not talking like I bumped my knee, like a major road accident, a truck flipped over, people are probably dead, blood on the ground, like major accidents. To me, there's awe within that. But there's I'm almost thinking visually, now I'm thinking awe has two knobs. One is what we could call, I don't know, love and joy. The other is fear. So the positive awe that we like, the Elon Musk or Dave's previous examples looking at the redwood, I think the love and joy knob is up, you know, 8 to 9 out of 10. But the fears one's still on, but it's at like 2 or 3 because you're realizing, again, I ain't the center of it all.
Yeah.
But when we see an accident, the love and joy probably goes down some and the fear one goes up higher
because
I think they're both operating all the time on a continuum. But that's where when it can become unhealthy, a paralysis from the fear. But there's still awe in that, but I think it's – I don't know.
I like your different one, your – because I will say I think those knobs maybe even are their own individual knob.
Yeah, yeah, they're two separate.
Because I think – well, I mean I even think there – I don't think love and joy
– oh, I
think they should get their own
separate
knobs.
I see what you mean.
And I'll say like when you were at Ray's funeral, right? I would think your love knob was up.
Mm-hmm.
Your fear knob definitely was up
too. It was
too,
up too.
Right? Your joy knob
was down. Yes, yes. Okay, good. Three different ones. But
I get
they're all there, you know? And so depending on the experience, you are in awe. Why do we slow down for accidents? Well, one, we're trying to have on a highway, right? Be good drivers, but people are usually looking. Like we look to see, like that's just part of the animalistic connection. Like, mm-hmm. And we might not be consciously thinking of it, but somewhere in that reptile brain, it's like, that could be me.
Yeah,
I could be dead now.
Yeah, we are always conscious of our own mortality, whether we want to recognize it or not. Goes back to that whole fear of death thing.
Right. So accidents, it pops the normality of our life, the expectations that I'm just going to humpty dump and go down the road and everything's normal. And then, uh-oh, abnormality. Yep, that could be awe. So there's that sense of awe. I don't, whether it's healthy or unhealthy or the love, joy, fear knobs, I don't know. But that's going to be one of my change challenges is the knobs.
Mm, that's a good one.
Yeah. Well, what else? Do you have other thoughts before we change gears?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't either. We've covered a lot of ground.
We have. And when you're talking about change challenges, it's hard because I don't think awe is something that can be synthesized. I don't think you can force it.
Well, you can't. That's like giving the directive. It's a paradox. Go be spontaneous today. By being spontaneous today, I'm not being spontaneous, you know? So it's like, we can't say, go seek awe.
Yeah. Here's my challenge.
All right, you go. Go ahead.
Come up with an awe bucket list. So,
ooh, great.
Yeah.
Really good one.
So the one thing that I know is on my awe bucket list, and I've talked about this before, is I want to see the Northern Lights, the Aurora Borealis. I've seen it on video, and I've had it described to me. And I even took a trek myself to go see it and be in awe. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to because of the weather conditions. It was very cloudy.
Awesome. Perfect.
But I'm so excited about that one because I know that one's going to blow me away, like I said.
We don't want to open back up, but I think there's even – like you probably had anticipatory awe. Even though you didn't get to see it, you were anticipatory of it.
You know what? It's interesting. I don't know how this works. You were talking about when you went to California or when you go to Mexico with us, that not trying to ruin it. It's like almost like when you watch a movie and you didn't have high expectations, it can end up being better than if you had high expectations.
Yeah, and we've talked about that a lot.
On the flip side, there's something about the way that I pre-experienced the Northern Lights that I'm more excited about it than the average person.
There you go.
I was in an office in Alaska with people who lived up there. And so they had videos of it on their phone. They're like, oh, yeah, this is my backyard. And it was green and light swirls that were flying in the sky. And you could hear it crackling, making a sizzling sound loud. I was like, what's that noise? And they're like, it surrounds you. That sound surrounds you. That's the ions interacting with the atmosphere making this crackle. And I was like, oh, it's just, I had awe just watching that. And like, that's want to see that in person.
That's cool. Yeah. No, I love it. That's a fantastic change. That's one of the best ones I think we've ever had personally. It's a good one because it can be brief. Everybody knows what a bucket list is. So create an awe bucket list. Mine's less cool. So do that one. Mine's just, take stock of past awe. Where have you bumped into it? And you're not going to be able to recreate the feeling, but just to, you know, like instead of, I'm sure you got pictures of stuff, flip through pictures, think about the nature that's given you awe, human relationships, social, birth or death, and then technology. And just think about where you've bumped into it. We'd love to say, go find you some awe, but you know, that's harder to do.
It's harder to do. Yeah. You could create that list though.
And, it's a great list.
You know, and say, these are the things
I think. Well, the point is to eventually do that.
Exactly.
But like saying, okay, on Monday, go find awe.
Right.
And you know, that's less realistic.
Exactly.
Well, we've talked about a lot. We've covered natural awe emanating from nature, awe emanating from the human brain and consciousness, awe emanating from social relationships and from the tools that humans have built over time. We've talked about the process of awe and how that can be different for different people and different experiences. We've talked about trying to anticipate what we're about to see and prepare ourselves and that how it can be both beneficial and constraining at the same time. The key is that we are not the center of the universe, and awe is about right-sizing yourself and being open and, as Dave said, accepting that. And there's a healthy fear there, but there should also be tons of respect, gratitude, and appreciation, or that euphoric feeling as well. So as we like to say at Life Lab, experiment with life.